Hey gang, that is the the full music. I realized that I never let it get to the end. But that's a big finale, and I probably messed it up with trying to sing along, and you can't sing along on Skype because of the speed of light and all of that stuff kind of interfering with things syncing up the way they're supposed to. But this is National Bugle Radio. National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. That is the website. You can go. You can find great shows like this one, like the other ones. You can find news stories. Very, very important website. And a very, very important phone number if you want to call and join the show today. That number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And you can also, in your spare time, go to nationalbugle.com. Check out that website. It's a good website. I wish I could ask for your shekels for my website, but I can't. I can ask for your Bitcoin, but I can't ask for your shekels. But you can send shekels to RBN. That's a good thing to do, because shekels is what keeps us on the air. Dollars, too. Okay, well, welcome to the show. And I thought we had a good show yesterday with Tom Kaczynski. I really like Tom Kaczynski. If you haven't heard that, you can go back into the archives on RBN and listen to Tom Kaczynski. I think he's got a big future in front of him. Now, he's written a book. Somebody had to say it. That's the name of his book. Someone has to say it. The Hidden History of How America Was Lost. I'm working on a book, too. I have written a lot, but, you know, a lot of it was a long time ago. And my working title, hopefully this will get out later this year, my working title is Riding the Zombie Corpse: Why the World Needs White Nationalists to Take Back Their Countries, or to Take Their Countries Back from Jewish Supremacists. So the premise of my book is that you have a Jewish-dominated elite that has taken over, that is dominating, controlling, if you want to use that word, the United States, Canada, Australia, Great Britain, even Ireland, Sweden, Germany, most of the European countries, through the EU, pretty much all of the European countries, with maybe a couple of small exceptions in Eastern Europe, and then Russia is problematic. Russia had been completely taken over during the 90s under Yeltsin, but Putin has scratched back enough control. There's still a lot of Jewish power there, but Putin has moved the country so much in the right direction. Some people might say, well, yes, but there's still this. There's still a lot of Jewish influence. Yes, under Putin, Holocaust denial laws were put in place, and that's all true. But if you compare Russia today to Russia 20 years ago, you just cannot deny the massive improvements that have been made. But so I see the Western countries, the white countries, as for the most part being under the effective control of an elite, and that elite is dominated by Jews. Doesn't mean that they make up the majority, even in the United States. Doesn't mean they make up the majority of the elite, but they dominate the elite. They dominate it. They constitute enough of it so that they can usually block developments, policies, what have you, that are not to their liking. And they can usually, over time, get their top priorities implemented, put into effect. And this is bad for the these countries, but it's really bad for the world, because what's happening is you're getting you could look at the Jews are a tribe, and they have a tribal religion. Now, of course, so many Jews are actually atheists, yet is that tribal religion irrelevant? I would say it's not irrelevant. The tribal religion itself is, you know, you could call it all sorts of things. It's, I don't know. But, you know, they find themselves, they fancy themselves as God's chosen people. But even those who are not actually religious and don't believe in God, they still see themselves as being perhaps Darwin's chosen people, I don't know, as being smarter, as being better, as being morally superior. Be that as it may, they're highly ethnocentric. They act tribally. And why the world needs white nationalists to take their countries back? Why? Why does the world need white nationalists to take their countries back? Well, they need it because these messianic or supremacist Jews are gaining control of everything that whites built up over the past several centuries, past millennia, a few millennia. Western technology, nuclear weapons. It's bad enough that Israel has its own arsenal of a few hundred nuclear warheads, as well as a triad of delivery vehicles, including, you know, one of the largest and most modern air forces in the world, these Dolphin-class submarines, many of which, or some of which, were given, not even sold at bargain basement prices, but given to Israel by Germany, the very country that Israel would probably want to wipe off the face of the earth first. And intercontinental ballistic missiles, the Jericho 3 ballistic missiles. They have that already, but the idea that they are taking control of the United States, and therefore the United States nuclear arsenal, this is very, very scary indeed. This should be something that would have the Chinese alarmed, and you know, the Russians alarmed for sure. Chinese, everybody. We're really, in our lifetime, we are on the verge. We're on the threshold of a planet completely, should I say completely, effectively, under the domination of this tiny elite, this tiny Jewish elite that does not have the interests of its fellow humans foremost in mind. In fact, they're very paranoid, and very ruthless in pursuit of what they see as, you know, their ethnic interests, their ethnic survival. They look at everything in terms of existential problems. I mean, they look at Palestinian rocks and kites, flaming kites, as an existential threat to them. Okay, got that, China? Okay, China. Now, China's is acquiring modern technology. They've got a growing military. You don't think they're on the Jews' radar system. Too many people in China seem to relate to Jews and look at them as some sort of model. So the West right now is a zombie. The United States is a zombie. And you look at our people, the white people in the United States, I'm sorry, a lot of us are zombies. We're on opioids, or maybe we're not on opioids. Maybe we're just stoned a lot. I'm dismayed. I mean, when I was in junior high school or high school and my classmates were smoking, going out in the woods and smoking marijuana, it's like, well, okay, it's a youthful thing. It's what they do. But unfortunately, for a lot of them, it's what they still do. And this push for legalizing marijuana, I don't think people should be thrown in jail for marijuana. And there may well be some medical applications for it, although I think being stoned is a side effect that should be avoided. There, to the extent there's medical applications to it, for the most part, I would think it should not involve being stoned. You know, there are non-psychoactive elements of the cannabis plant that could be extracted and used as medicine for these purposes. But of course, medical marijuana has all been just a loophole in order for stoners to get stoned. It hasn't been any good for our people to be stoned, and nor being on opiates, nor being on sports ball. The excessive, I mean, there's so many, sometimes you listen to sports talk radio and you hear people and they know, not just the player stats, they know the player contracts, they know the ins and outs of the business and the finance of the teams and the rules of the league. They know all this stuff, but they're applying it to something of absolutely no importance. If you know all this, if you are capable of absorbing all of this detail, why not run a business? Or why not apply it to the stock market and make yourself some money that way? Well, I have a caller. I have Jeremy from Kentucky. Let's see what Jeremy has to say. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Dr. Slattery. I'm having lunch on my job, and you just mentioned so many things that are so fascinating that you know I like to talk about.
Yes,
so,
indeed.
I'm calling. Yeah, Jewish power in Russia, Darwin's chosen people. Man, where do we start? Messianic Jews? You're just getting me going now.
Yeah, sometimes I'm channeling you, I think. And when I was mentioning the Holocaust laws that were put in place by the Putin government, I was speaking to you directly, because I know that's something you brought to my attention. But yeah, still, my basic conclusion was on balance. I mean, notwithstanding real things like that, notwithstanding that, still, if you compare Russia today to Russia 20 years ago, Putin has done so much to get them out from under the Jewish yoke.
Well, yeah, agreed. And, you know, that law, he did those Holocaust laws at the very month, or either the month after his, daughter married that Jewish banker. That's interesting. And now they're divorced, so let's see what the future holds. Yeah, that was one thing. Real quick comment on Darwin's chosen people. That's interesting that I've explained before why I think a rabbinical leaders really push for evolution and really push that idea, is because I think deep down these Jewish rabbis believe that non-Jews are animals, and we did come from animals, but they didn't see. They, when they're truthful, they wouldn't believe that they were a part of that. But that's just a quick comment on that. You and I have had our discussions on evolution before. I guess what I really wanted to bring up is this article in the Stormer, U.S. Ambassador to Israel. Excuse me, U.S. Ambassador to Israel gleefully accepts Photoshop portrait of Jerusalem with Al-Qaeda replaced with Jewish temple. Al-Aqsa, okay, there you go. Basically, the Dome of the Rock gone in this picture, and being replaced with the Jewish temple, the big dreaded third Jewish temple that evangelicals are all a clamor about. Maybe we could discuss that today, and I can give you the quote evangelical view, unquote, and why these people are all excited.
Go for it. Go for it.
Well, your Christian listeners are going to be very familiar with these scriptures, even though they may not see them the same way. As you know, I've studied dispensationalism, and I use it as a tool to study biblical prophecy, because it really doesn't make sense if you don't use that systematic theology. So the basic idea is, you know, you've had two temples in the past, the Temple of Solomon, about 1000 B.C. Then you had that destroyed by the Babylonians in 586 B.C., and then the Persians under Cyrus the Persian, and all the way through to Darius and Artaxerxes, through the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, you had the Jews allowed to rebuild their temple. Israel was allowed to rebuild their temple. And that temple was called the Herodian Temple because much later than that, even like 20 B.C., Herod the Great, who actually was Herod the Terrible, because he was a terrible, terrible person, one of these dirty, despicable Jews that we see today. Herod the Terrible built great buildings on the temple complex, and some of the buildings were impressive, and some of the stones were, you know, several tons, 12 feet long and several tons. And, you know, you can read in the book of Matthew, chapter 24, Jesus predicted that all these buildings would be thrown down so that not one stone left on another. And in fact, Flavius Josephus records that in the 66 to 70 AD, Jewish revolt where, you know, Titus came in, there was a general before Titus that seized the city in 66. And then he ran out of supplies, and I can't remember that guy's name, but he left to get more supplies. He was killed. And there was about a year window of opportunity there. And all the Christians in Jerusalem left because they read Jesus' warning. When you see this happen, the Jews of Jerusalem surrounded, get out of there. So all the Christians left, and all the unbelieving Jews were there, and they fought. And then when Titus returned to complete the mission, they burnt the temple and all the buildings, and all the gold melted down in between the stones, and the Romans systematically removed the stones down to the foundation so that not one stone was left on another. This interesting prophecy of Jesus that nobody can really refute, by the way. But then, so now the temple's been gone since then, since 70 AD. So the prophecies in dispensational thought is that the being known as the Antichrist will come in and he'll take control of a one-world government that is already in existence, and it's a government composed of 10 kings. He'll overthrow three of the kings, and he'll take over the other seven. And he'll make this unholy alliance with the Jews. You can read about this in Daniel chapter 9, prophecy called the 77s. And they will conspire. Either the temple will already be built, or he will have it built. But regardless, he will be the head of that temple. Like, his image will be put in that temple to be worshipped. And it will be an evil, vile temple, and the Jews will go right along with it, the Jews of that day, which probably are the same Jews we see today in Israel. So that's the big deal with the third temple. And I guess, you know, England, I'm sure, doesn't know all of the prophecies like that. He just sees evangelicals flipping out. But there are actually evangelicals, these Haggaiites, who want this to happen. And this is fascinating. They want the third temple because they believe that that will usher in the Messianic Age. Now, the thing is, it will, because it's going to get so evil that Jesus himself will have to come back. Now, I'm speaking as a Christian, right? I know there's people that don't believe this, but I'm speaking as a Christian. I'm explaining it to you. So, but these evangelicals are thinking, we want this evil to happen so that it'll bring about good. That's their whole mentality. But see, that's flawed. That's like going back in time. You know, I believe that Jesus died on the cross for our sins and rose again. But if I went back in time to 2000 AD...
I think we might be going on break. This is usually our... Okay, well...
Okay, yeah. Sorry, I didn't know we went through the break.
No.
That would be like going... Okay, that's like going back in time. If I went back in time 2,000 years ago, I would not be going in there with the Pharisees and going out with the crowds yelling, crucify him, because I knew that he's supposed to die for our sins. That's not what the disciples did, who were Christians. That was a terrible time for them to see their Lord, you know, crucified. So in the same way, these evangelicals who want to usher in all of this evil temple nonsense, they're just crazy. And they're the same crazy people that write checks to Hagee and support for Jews and all this. They don't, I see where they're legitimately deceived, but it is a little, I can see why people like Anglin and maybe even you would think that they're just nuts. But I'm just, hopefully that explained it a little better. Maybe you can see their point of view and the reason for their lunacy.
Yeah. So I'm not a believer in biblical prophecy, but to the extent that there are people who, and lots of people who are believers in it, then it becomes a real thing, even if it's rooted in something that I personally might not believe myself. It becomes real. So the article you're referring to, and I just want to make sure that the readers understand this, is our Jewish ambassador to Israel was presented with a picture. It's basically a picture of this of Jerusalem, you know, from the area, what would you call it, a skyline of Jerusalem, but it has the what is it called, the Al-Aqsa Temple removed and replaced with a third temple. So the Al-Aqsa Mosque is removed. The golden domed mosque that is, you know, at the center of Jerusalem has been removed and replaced with an imagined third temple. And Ambassador Friedman is just so happy. He's got this massive smile on his face. And So this is what we're referring to, and it was in the Daily Stormer article, and yeah, indeed, a lot of people, the Christian Zionists seem to be, a big part of the problem, and I didn't address that in the first part of the show when I was talking about. I got as far as sports ball and marijuana and opiates, but do I have it in my notes? Christian Zionism, this kind of one of the other things that is zombieizing us is a Judaized version of Christianity, and to me that's it. Although I don't consider myself Christian, I don't look at Christianity as a whole as being a problem. It can be a source of strength or it can be a source of weakness. It depends. But the Judaized version that is represented by people like Reverend Hagee, this is a major weakness that we have. You would agree with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you and I talk to each other, we tend to compartmentalize, I can tell. You know, in our own minds, like, I believe the prophecies. I know there's going to be a third Jewish temple. And that's the thing, the prophecy of the Antichrist signing the contract with the Jews and him putting his image in the temple, well, that's impossible with the Dome of the Rock there. There's no way that could ever happen unless that Dome of the Rock the temple is moved and then the third Jewish temple comes in. So, I mean, like, to actually see this, like a picture of this is kind of weird, makes my skin tingle. But yeah, you know, and the Bible does also speak, the Apostle Paul speaks about a great deception that falls on the entire world. And I think that Christian Zionism is one of the fruition, that's one of the fruits of this deception. It's this deception that the current Jews that are in Israel now are the chosen, and that we go along with whatever.
While I have you on, and because you are a biblical scholar, how do you explain the very different tone between the Gospel of John and on the one hand and, you know, Matthew, Luke, and Mark on the other hand? I guess, what is it, yeah. Matthew and Luke have more or less the same source, but anyway, these other three Gospels have a very different tone and often are explaining events, different events or events differently.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that you, as a, you know, you profess you're not a like an actual Christian. Mm-hmm. That's interesting that you note that difference. It's very obvious. And I'm going to tread lightly because you have Christian identity audiences and you have many different Christian groups that are listening. Here's the deal. The book of Matthew was written to an Israel audience. Now, depending on who you think Israel was in the Old Testament, that's the deal because it gives the genealogy of Christ back to David, King David. So for his physical body, because, you know, the teaching of Christianity is that Jesus is God and man. He's God in the flesh. So Matthew was for an Israeli audience, for the true Israel that will, you know, be in heaven, okay? Not the Jews that we see today that are misbehaving. Luke, he was a non-Jew. Dr. Luke was a Greek, and that's for more of the intellectual audience, and there's a lot more details and facts given in Luke. Like, you get into the genealogy of John the Baptist, which was Jesus' cousin. It was Mother Mary's sister, Elizabeth, had John the Baptist, okay? So, and then you get in the book of Mark. Well, you know, Mark is named after the god Mars, and that's a Roman god. Not that the Bible's... I mean, some of your pagan audience would then say, oh, look, Christian paganism coming together. Well, maybe, but really what it was is to appeal to a Roman audience. The Gospel of Mark is short, decisive, bam, 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 and gives you the details. John now is more for non-Jewish Christians, new believers in Christ. Usually that's who I would refer the book of John, the Gospel of John, for them to read. It deals more with Jesus' deity. Whereas Matthew would deal a lot with his humanity. So I hope that explained it well enough to you.
And so, for instance, when Jesus is on the cross, John has him saying, Lord, why have you forsaken me, or something to that effect. And the other Gospels quote him as saying, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do.
Yeah, it's both. This is what's called parallel... There's parallel passages, and each writer of the gospel, the reason why there's four is they each wrote, and I believe it's inspired by God, and you, I'm sure, don't, but they gave their own what you would call perspective and what I would call inspiration, or God actually breathed the words to them. And so if you read Luke and Matthew, Matthew 24, the parallel passage is Luke 21, and Luke 21 covers the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, and Matthew 24 covers a future of Jerusalem where the Antichrist sits up his image. And you've got to get the whole picture, you've got to read all four Gospels, especially the crucifixion, because he said all of those things.
Okay. Well, we are coming up to the break, and just for clarification, when I say I don't believe, it doesn't mean I'm sure it never happened. I don't have that type of certainty about anything. So... Well, thank you very much for your call, Jeremy. You're always welcome. And we'll be back after the break with another segment.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to the show, back to National Bugle Radio, and I am going to go to Wayne from West Virginia. Wayne, welcome to the show. Wayne, are you still there?
You hear me okay?
Yep, I hear you just fine. What's on your mind, Wayne?
Well, I want to talk about crime a little bit.
Okay.
And as you know, we have a lot of crime in the streets, and we have the gangs, and we have the teenagers going in and robbing the stores, vandalizing them and stealing and getting away with it. So the bottom line is that's part of the plan. And what the communists do is they let crime run rampant until the public screams for law and order, and they cry for law and order. And once they do that, then they can give you law and order their way. They can pass all kind of laws, gun confiscation, they can pass hate crimes, and they can just take over through law and order, and you scream for it. You wanted it, now you're getting it. And that's exactly what's going on right now. Go ahead. What do you think?
I think there's a lot to what you say. I really do. You see, for instance, the incitement of violence by the establishment, which is a Jewish-run establishment, but incitement against whites in particular. They're inciting blacks who are more prone to violence than others. So they tell them that they're victimized. They tell them that, they're oppressed, that there's institutional racism, that there's white privilege. And this allows them to feel that they can just, you know, commit crime with impunity. It does. I do think it impacts the level of crime. You have other factors. You have, police stand downs where the police are instructed to behave a certain way or not to patrol certain ways. Look at what happens in public schools. And you've had in public schools, it was really official policy under the Obama administration that you couldn't punish blacks any more than you were punishing whites. Well, the thing is, blacks cause the problems, and a lot of the problems in school are actually criminal problems, you know, problems of violence and problems of theft. Although in many public schools, if you call the police about a crime that took place in a public school, the police won't investigate. They say you have to call the school, and then the school will do nothing. So, yeah, I think there's been a variety of ways in which they've turned up the volume, turned up the volume knob on crime. And I think you have very good points there, Wayne.
Well, you notice, too, I noticed today where they're going into the white neighborhoods now. I think there in Las Vegas it happened, and it's happening in other places, but they're going into white neighborhoods now and beating up Whitey. And Whitey's getting very, very upset, and he may overreact, which is right into their plan. You know, once the first shot's fired, then they can do what they want to. And I'm talking about the you-know-who. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're in that particular stage to the point where they want people to scream for law and order, and then, like I say, then they can give you their law and order any way they want. So I think that's what's going on. And the other thing I did want to mention, I won't get into it. I'm not interested in debating it and all, but I hear a lot of groups that are very down on the Masons, the Masonic Lodge. Mm-hmm. But yet, on the other hand, what they'll do is say, well, George Washington was our first president, and he didn't want this and that. Well, George Washington was a Mason. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these other leaders at that time were Masons, and if it wasn't for the Masons, probably we may not have had a revolution. And if we hadn't had a revolution, we wouldn't have had a country. So I think sometimes we have to be a little more open-minded and look at things in a different perspective. For instance, Maryland at one time, if you were Jewish, you couldn't get into the Masonic Lodge. Blacks weren't allowed in the Masonic Lodge. So I think we should be more open-minded with a lot of things, Professor Flattery, because what I'm looking at is when you look across the board, knowingly or unknowingly, most of the people of different races and different nationalities, they have one common enemy. And we know who that common enemy is. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, you know, the picture is pretty big when you start looking at it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I haven't made a comprehensive study on the Masons. I think certainly there's some easy scapegoating of the Masons, where when people don't want to name the Jew, they can name the Mason. I think at least at certain times and in certain places, the Masons have been a place where Jewish elites and non-Jewish elites are able to get together. And certainly in the past century or so, where you have venues where Jewish elites and non-Jewish elites get together. And more than the Masons, I'd be thinking of the Bilderbergers, you know, the Trilateral Commission. They tend to be venues where the Jewish elites are bringing the non-Jewish elites, you know, on board with their agenda. So there can be a problem there. As far as I know, the Masons go way back. I think they were a big deal when the cathedrals were being built in Europe, and they had this technology, this cathedral building technology, stone cutting. Cathedrals are made out of stone. And I guess they had, you know, in certain ways they were like a guild. They were able to use the technology, but also restrict general access to that kind of knowledge. Which would have given them a certain amount of economic power. George Washington and a lot of the early American leaders were Masons. If you go to Alexandria, Virginia, across the river from Washington, there is a Masonic monument. It was actually the Washington Monument is based on it or something, but it is, you know, it is a, what do you call that shape? The same shape as the Washington Monument, phallic shape, whatever it's called. And now in the late 1920s and 1930s, you had a reaction against Masonism, and you had the anti-Masonic party formed in the United States that won gubernatorial elections and Senate, and had senators, and won some states in, I guess, the election of 1832. It was a real party, the anti-Masonic party. So they've been a factor, for better or for worse, and it may well be at times it's for better and may be at times for worse. I think today, more than anything else, they're probably not that significant, and they're just a convenient scapegoat for people who know something's going wrong but don't want to name the Jew. What do you think of that?
Well, that's very true. What happened was, see, the Masons were being crucified by the Catholics when they started the Masonry, and the Catholics would behead you if they caught you. So that's where a lot of the secret stuff come in for their own protection. If you were a Mason and you were, say, going to Germany or somewhere like that, then what would happen, they would give you a contact to contact a Mason in Germany who would, you know, put you up and find you a job and so on and so forth. But you had to know the particulars of how to greet yourself when you went to that individual's home. So a lot of the secrets were more or less just a convenient way to keep yourself from getting crucified. But other than that, and I'm not defending, you know, Masonry is like any other organization. They've had good and they've had bad. And but to give you an example, if a Catholic wants to join the Masons, what would happen, he can join the Masonic Lodge, but the Catholic Church denounces him. You know, they do it for the Masons. You know, he's no longer a Catholic. But, you know, and it goes on and on. And like I say, I don't want to get into a particular debate with it, but there probably would not be, there would not have been a revolution had it not been for a lot of the members of the Masonic Lodge.
Mm. Well, I mean, here's one thing. The Masons, okay, it is a secret society, but they are subject to at least a certain amount of scrutiny. There is no prohibition on discussing them. So, you know, there may be something to it, but people can investigate and people can talk about it. The same with the Bilderbergers or the Trilateral Commission. We can say who the members are. You can publish lists on the Trilateral of members of the Trilateral Commission and report on their activities, and you can criticize them. With Jews, if you criticize them, you're just going to be smashed. And that's the real difference. And so it's not as if the Bilderbergers or the Trilateral Commission or the Masons are without influence or without power. But if you can investigate it and you can talk about it, you can keep that power in check. But if the problem with Jewish power is you're not allowed to talk about it except on the fringes. You couldn't talk about it in public. You can't acknowledge Jewish power in the mainstream. And if you do, find yourself smashed down, just like Rick Sanchez, just by mentioning it 5, 6, 7 years ago. We're having a little bit of sound issues here. But just simply mentioning that, oh, yeah, John Stewart, yeah, he's Jewish, and yeah, the Jewish people, yeah, very powerless people, yeah. Just to make a sarcastic remark like that, and he gets fired by his Jewish boss, Jeff Zucker, the very next day.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the big difference. Yeah. You know, as simple as that. So, listen, I lost you, and I'll talk to you later.
You can criticize.
Thank you for your call. And to me, that really is the big difference. Now, just getting back to riding the zombie corpse, one of the big things is that that people, most people in society, in our society, most non-Jews are, they don't know who's Jewish and who's not Jewish. So, I mean, before you can talk about Jewish power, you have to actually say, well, who's Jewish? Why, you know, if you say, oh, the Jews run everything, which I'm not saying they run everything, but if you say they're extremely powerful, and then you have so much preliminary basic education that you have to do. You have to say, okay, well, these are the major media corporations. And then you have to say, did you know that, you know, Jeff Zucker was Jewish? And of course, people will say, well, who's Jeff Zucker? Well, he's the head of CNN. Oh, okay. Well, did you know Roger Moonves is Jewish? Well, who's he? Well, he's the head of CBS. Oh, you have so much basic, and you know, and because it's, people might say, oh, well, you know, the Obama wasn't Jewish and Trump's not Jewish. So how can you say Jews are dominating society? None of the presidents are. But you have to do so much preliminary education. It really gets difficult. And that just to state, for instance, Rick Sanchez, to simply state that, hey, Jon Stewart's Jewish, and a lot of people at CNN, you know, a lot of people at CNN are just like Jon Stewart. And even just to lay one or two bricks in that foundation of knowledge people need, you get fired. And, you know, that says it all. Whereas Jews do tend to know these things, Jews tend to be able to identify each other. They have little things sometimes. If you're, and I have to say, I've had a lot of personal dealings with Jews, and I don't find Jews that obnoxious. I don't find Jews dislikable. A lot of Jews are perfectly charming, perfectly nice people, and I don't. The issue that I have with them is not that I think on average they're bad individuals. On average, they're obnoxious. On average, they're horrible to deal with. That's not it. But because they have this ethnocentrism and are much more likely than other people to want to defend what they see as their group interest. And for most people, for the typical Jew, all that is helping to enforce this taboo on talking about Jews. On, you know, if you're in a room with 10 people or 20 people, and you just started talking about something that they see as a threat to the, you know, to this taboo, if you were to start mentioning that, oh, Jeff Zucker and Roger Moonves and so and so are Jews, all of a sudden they are going to start projecting a lot of uncomfortable feelings. You know, what will they say? Who knows? They might say, oh, well, this is a type of talk that led to 6 million deaths, this type of thing. But for the typical Jew, it's their actual participation in the crime may be no more than simply with their presence enforcing this taboo. But this taboo is really, really central to Jewish power, because the fact that you can't talk about it means it goes unchecked. And any other kind of power, any other corporate power, the oil lobby, doesn't go unchecked. Jewish power goes unchecked. We'll be back after the break with more of National Bugle Radio.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee.
Welcome back to National Bugle Radio. So we just have a few more minutes. I want to get into the zombie corpse. So European people in their various countries, and we can think of United States in particular because we're here, we built up a very, very powerful society. And, of course, you can think of our weaponry, but that weaponry is predicated on an industrial infrastructure. An industrial base, and that industrial base is predicated on, you know, an agricultural base, on railroads, on this transportation infrastructure, on legal system, on the governing system. And this was, we built this up. Now, you could say that, you know, over the past century, you know, Jews have made certain contributions to it in terms of technology, in terms of building, you know, new businesses. And you can make that case. You can also make the case that often the Jewish contribution is exploitative rather than really contributing to the national wealth. But that's it's still, however you want to treat that, the fact of the matter was that when Jews started coming to the United States en masse around the turn of the last century, the United States had already emerged as the biggest and most dynamic economic power. And, you know, the same could be said for various European countries, the Jewish role in building up those countries was minimal and exploitative. Yet they've gained control of these societies. And this is very dangerous. And one of the advantages they have, and this is what this is my bat theory. There are cultures that look at bats as being two-faced because they go to the mammals and say, "Hey, we're furry, we're like you," and they go to the birds and say, "Hey, we have wings, we're like you." And they can do this. They go to the minorities and say, "Look, we're oppressed. We're like you. We're a minority, a religious minority." But then they go to whites and say, "Hey, fellow whites, you know, we've been mean to black people, and we've got to give them welfare and reparations and ignore the high crime rates and what have you." They do this, and they can do it because of the differential rates of recognition. They can tell the difference, for the most part, between Jews and the Goyim. And the Goyim, for the most part, cannot. They can't tell the difference between Jews and non-white Jews. And so they can go into Harvard and they say, "Oh, look, Harvard, you know, okay, we're Harvard's half white." Well, yeah, half white, but most of those so-called Hawaites are Jews. And when you get down to the non-Jewish whites, you just find this massive underrepresentation. It's not just Harvard. So it's all over the place. So they can get away with saying, "Hollywood, it's so white, it's so white." And of course, Hollywood is so Jewish. Well, I want to be taking some time off this summer, not from this show, but from my normie business. And I want to be developing these ideas. And hopefully later in the year, I'll be pushing my book along with the Co-Certified app. By the way, download that Co-Certified app. It is you will love having all of that delicious non-kosher food. Just imagine. Well, I'm hearing our swan song, and that is great. That means that I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.